Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Your Body and Spirit Radio Show. This is your host, Marcia Carnatelli-Miner, and my business partner, Tom Katowski, and I would like to extend our warmest welcome to all of you, both those who have been with us for quite a while and those that are just learning about Mind Your Body and Spirit and joining us each and every Friday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. The Mind, Your Body, and Spirit Radio Show is being brought to you by the Healthy Referral Newspaper. And the newspaper is a national, international, full-size newspaper totally dedicated to preventive, natural health, personal growth, and positive news. It is so cute. The other day when I was speaking to a person, and she was so kindly to ask just, you know, what our business is about, and when I simply said to her, we educate the public about preventive, natural health, personal growth, and positive news, she looked at me and this huge, huge grin came over her face and said, what a novel idea. And in fact, I think Sue is listening today, and I just want to tell her thanks for that. We ended up talking for a little while after her comment, and it was quite a joy. On that note, the Healthy Referral Newspaper is available to all who are in the preventive and natural fields who want to communicate their mission and get their message out there. We are thrilled to be walking this mission the past 24 years, actually longer than that, but we actually began in 1989 after 4 years of my business partner and I talking and going over different opportunities and manifesting the newspaper, radio show, expos and things like that. So within 4 years, everything had been developed. And so for those of you who have been a part of the Healthy Referral through these 24 years and those who are just coming aboard, we want to say thanks so very much for your support. It means everything to us. Without you, of course, we wouldn't have the Healthy Referral Newspaper, we wouldn't be having this Mind, Your Body, and Spirit radio show, nor would we be producing the International Natural Health and Foods Expo that is going on its 16th year in Orlando, Florida this year. So all of this is possible because of you, and that's why we like to make sure we take a moment at the beginning of the show and say thank you. We wish all of you amazing health, and as we know, health is wealth. In fact, we have a saying that has walked with us through these 24 years, and that is nutritional wealth, financial health. If you are wanting to participate in the, the different opportunities, because there are several of them, on Mind, Your Body, and Spirit, we would love to talk to you about that. We can tell you how you can actually be on the show. we can express the different topics that we'd love you to share with us. In fact, we have a beautiful interview today, and I know she's on hold for a moment, and we will get into that and tell you more in a moment. To contact us, you can reach us at 216-533-2273. Once again, that's 216-533-2273. Our web address is www.healthyreferral.com. And email is always great. We love to hear from you by way of email. And one of the email addresses is marciacm@yahoo.com. So it reads marciacm@yahoo.com. And, of course, when you are on our healthyreferral.com website, there is a way to email us through that. Any of these ways is fine because they all do come directly into, reaching us in our email boxes. All right. You heard me mention about the wonderful interview today. And when I got this book, I sat down and I absolutely took the time to read through it. And it is definitely one that I would have on the top shelf, close at hand, to use as a guide for what so many of us are having, difficulties in comprehending on the planet today. And as we go along with our interview with Nora, you're going to know why I said that the way that I did. But let's go ahead and make sure that Nora is on the line. Nora, are you there?
Oh, yes. Hello.
Hello, hello. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that generous introduction.
Oh, well, I haven't quite even done an introduction yet, but I just know that the book itself, because I'm into energies and just good vibrations, and when a book comes to me and I pick it up, I get a pretty quick sense of, whether it's something that I really want to read in depth or simply scan, and I think you know what I mean because of you being who you are and what you've been doing in your life. So this was definitely one of the books that I could not put down. And I was talking to a friend the other day, and in fact I had the book on the table, and she was nearby, and we were talking about the radio shows and the interviews. And I mentioned what was going to be taking place today, and she said, "Oh, it sounds like a really interesting book." And so, of course, the book was sitting there.
Yeah.
And so she picks it. I gave it to her to look at, and she said, "Wow!" And of course, she's very much into this and is familiar with Weston Price and so forth.
Sure.
So she asked if she could borrow it, and so I did give it to her for like a day or whatever, and then she returned it to me because I wanted to make sure that I had it for the interview. But Nora, I'd like to just back up and let me make sure that I'm going to pronounce this name correctly.
And, I know what's coming.
Anyway, listeners, I would like to do a proper introduction. We are interviewing the author of Primal Body, Primal Mind, Beyond the, and people pronounce this differently, in fact, the girl the other day did, but Beyond the Paleo Diet. Paleo Diet for Total Health and a Longer Life. And we are speaking today with Nora Gedgaudas.
Well, close.
Gedgaudas.
Yeah, I know. I apologize up front for my name. I've heard every possible pronunciation of that name as time has gone on.
No, well, I think I got it now. Gedgaudas. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to practice that. Nationality is that?
It's 100% Lithuanian. Both my parents came from Lithuania, and Yeah, it's even in Lithuania, it's not necessarily a very common name, but yes, it's followed me through my whole life. So there you
well,
go.
Well, I have to share this with you as we move along here. I get somewhat the same thing, but it's not Lithuanian; it's Italian. And my name that I have started to use again, because it is my maiden name, is Carnicelli.
Oh,
so
okay.
I
that rolls right off the tongue.
So when people say, oh, okay, you know, I don't have to express what nationality I am whenever I give out my last
right,
name.
Exactly.
Well, Nora,
I was on coast to coast last night for the third time, and then George Nori finally is getting my name right. So it took him three shows actually to get to a place where he can pronounce my name flawlessly now. So you're in good company.
Well, that's great to hear. If he's having a little bit of difficulty with it, I don't feel so bad. But you know, speaking, I've been learning the Italian language and everything too. So it's like, you know, usually I can tackle a name and get it pretty good. This one, let me just try it one more time. Get Galdis.
Hey, she got it. Yes, you got it.
Okay.
And really, it's pronounced, you know, just like it's spelled. I mean, Ged Gaudis. I mean, it's, you know, the three, nine letters, three syllables. But when you just look at it as one big block of a word, it just sort of looks like it starts with a G and goes on. So you kind of have to relax into it a little. Yeah.
Okay, Nora, I'd love to just start out today by you sharing a little bit about just who you are and what are you really doing on the planet with your mission?
<That's>
I know
that gets
pretty, people do this to me and I go, okay, let's see. But anyway, it's fun to turn it around with my guests on the show and give them the opportunity. So you're doing beautiful things on the planet, basically educating the public, helping people get back to really what your book's title is, and that is, you know, the primal body, primal mind. So I'm just going to turn this over to you at this moment, and if you could tell a little bit about yourself and just what actually led you to where you are today.
Oh, boy. Well, it's been one convoluted path, let me tell you. And probably from, you know, late in high school or whatever, suddenly the, you know, the interest in nutritional science just sort of grabbed a hold of me. And then sometime in college, it just sort of started to become, well, to call it an obsession makes it sound like an unhealthy thing, but it captured me. In a way nothing else had up to that point, or almost nothing else. I've worn a lot of hats in the course of my lifetime, and there have been many things that I've been quite passionate about. But this is a love that's followed me for, you know, about the last 30 years or so now. So, and it started out, I think, with the recognition that I could change the way I felt and the way I functioned by changing the kind of nutrients I put into my body. Now, I didn't understand things in general dietary terms. I was, in the beginning, I think, learning more about supplements, what the different vitamins did, what the different minerals did in the body. I began learning some early things about the individual amino acids and what roles those had to play, particularly in the realm of neurotransmitters and all of that, and that became a real early interest of mine, and I figured out that I could really change the way I felt and the way I functioned with these things, and I never forgot the power of that, but it keeps being brought home to me pretty much every day, you know, doing what I do, because I see it. I see people transform themselves on a regular basis by just making some rudimentary changes to what they put in their bodies. And every single biochemical reaction in your body and brain, and every last cell in your body is dependent upon the nutrients we supply it with, absolutely all of it. So, and recognizing that, just, you know, and recognizing the power of that just captured my imagination. But it took me down a lot of different trails over many years. And, you know, at some point or another, everybody gets seduced into trying on vegetarianism or veganism because it's, you know, it gets promoted.
Macrobiotics or, you know, you name it, there's a whole...
Yeah,
whole
I never got sucked into macrobiotics, and I feel relieved about that because it might have killed me, seriously, just by virtue of the fact that it's so based in grains. And grains, you know, I've since discovered have an absolutely devastating impact on my health and actually on the health of a great many people. But in my family in particular, you know, autoimmune diseases run rampant and a lot of other chronic degenerative illnesses that have been associated with grain consumption. So I really dodged a bullet there. But with respect to, you know, vegetarianism and veganism, you know, I've been passionate also. One of my other passions in life has been animals and wildlife and nature, and I've been very passionate about the environment my whole life. I've worked for Sierra Club Wildlife Task Force. I've been members of all kinds of smaller organizations where I've been very active, I even went door to door for Greenpeace for a while. So, you know, there is this other undercurrent, and one is led to believe that, you know, that eating the meat of animals is cruel and unnecessary, and you can get by on vegetables and be healthier. And so I bought into that for a little while, and that was something else that came close to unraveling me. It put me into a place where I developed eating disorders, and it deepened the cycle of depression that I'd suffered since childhood. It made things much worse, and it was something that and it left me with an almost obsession with. I found myself craving meat all the time and feeling very guilty about it until one day I just threw my arms up in the air and said, oh, well, I can't do it, and felt like a failure. And then, you know, over time I recognized that, you know, that those cravings may have saved my life. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, it's been a journey, and it wasn't until maybe 15, 20 years ago that I came across the work of Weston Price. And that was the first time, and I'd had prior to that an interest in anthropology and an interest in nutrition, and had attempted to combine those kinds of majors and things in college. But I couldn't figure out to save my life how I would ever combine those two areas, because it hadn't occurred to me to look at diet and health from an evolutionary perspective before. It just wasn't something that had occurred to me. And then years later, I run into the work of Weston Price, and it's like, you know, the V8 commercial, you know, palm to the forehead. Why didn't I ever think of this? And it was brilliant, and it resonated, and suddenly things began to coalesce, where I'd had a rather compartmentalized. I mean, I had a very sophisticated understanding at that point of many different aspects of physiology, nutrition, and all these kinds of things by the time I came across Weston Price's work. But, you know, anybody who's interested in the subject runs into conflicting information all the time. You run into conflicting theories, and you're told this is good, and then next you're told it's not, and it's very jading. And all of a sudden, everything just sort of coalesced. Suddenly, there was this sort of unifying concept that was completely liberating, I think, to my intellect and liberating to my sense of what was true, and it finally just made sense. And I dug from there. I mean, Weston Price in that regard was really a starting point for me. And I still value that information, but I've taken it to other realms since then. And ultimately, you know, to me, looking at diet and health from an evolutionary perspective is absolutely must be foundational to any other discussion of what constitutes an optimal diet. And what our ancestors did to me is, well, they did what they had to do day to day. And what they did through many millennia of varying climatic conditions and other factors ultimately had a shaping effect on our physiological makeup and on our nutritional requirements. And it made us who we are. And we are 99.999% identical to people who, to the Homo sapiens species that emerged 200,000 years ago. And since the inception of, we've only been in the period of agriculture for maybe 0.4% of our entire entire evolutionary history, and we have only genetically modified, since then, maybe 0.005%. So it's very clear that we are not ideally suited to the kinds of things that agriculture has brought us. There's also a myth, of course, that somehow this agricultural approach to eating, in other words, a plant-based diet, is somehow superior for our environment. And it's very, very abundantly clear that that is not the case. So many things that vegetarians are told about what they're doing for the world and the environment and whatever else is so much the opposite of what is actually true. And I would challenge in a very respectful way anyone who is embracing that point of view, and believe me, I understand it because I've been there. My heart has been there right with yours. Take a look at the work of Lier Keith, Vegetarian Myth. She has done a magnificent job from the perspective of somebody who was a dyed-in-the-wool vegan for 20 years with all the same passions. And she decided to become honest with herself one day and really research this. And what she uncovered is nothing less than, I think, the single most important ecological book of our time. So, at any rate, I'm digressing quite a bit.
She's the author of the Vegetarian Myth, correct?
Yes, Lier Keith is the author of Vegetarian Myth. The Vegetarian Myth is such an important book, even if you don't even have an interest in diet.
Right.
If you care about the environment, then you really do need to read that one. What I'd also encourage people to do is look at what is currently the work of the Savory Institute, and Alan Savory, who heads it in Zimbabwe. He actually has organizations, or he has people that he has trained worldwide in all countries and in many areas of this country. SavoryInstitute.com, SavoryInstitute.com. What he has done and what he is doing is actually restoring the health of the environment, restoring watersheds, reversing desertification of our environment, just simply using the natural cycles of grazing animals. Basically, it's all about grass-fed meat. We think of raising meat for food as an environmentally bad thing. As it turns out, it's a bad thing if we're talking about feedlots. I have no argument with anybody in that regard. But if we're talking about grass-feeding animals, which a huge, more of the planet is suitable for grass-feeding animals than it is for agriculture, it has the potential to turn around so much of what has been environmental devastation in so many places in the world. And the work is really quite profound and quite beautiful, and it's attracted the attention of many world leaders, including the wife of our current president, who has actually been there. Now, whether that'll turn into anything is a whole other matter, but at least there are people taking notice and should.
Why do you think that so many people are where they are at this moment with their understanding or their confusion in regards to the whole eating process?
Oh, well, you know, to me, you know, there's more misinformation, you know, and disinformation about what it really means to eat a healthy diet than anything else. And I think that the whole subject is so kind of mixed up with different theories, and there's a tremendous amount of emotion involved in this subject, lots of wishful thinking, lots of misconceptions. But more than anything, there is a tremendous amount of corporate interest. And there are a lot of people vying for our dollars on a lot of different fronts. And so so at every turn, depending on who it is that is interested in making money at the moment, we're being told certain things about, you know, what is or isn't healthy.
Right.
But so much of what we base on, you know, for instance, you know, the food pyramid, the food pyramid is not based on science. The food pyramid is based on economic and political interests.
Absolutely.
At the base of the food pyramid, we're told that we need to consume somewhere between 6 to 11 servings of grains every day. Now, you will note that this is the U.S. Department of Agriculture's pyramid. And I can tell you that with what's been constructed by the government to kind of lead us into health with nutritional guidelines, no natural human people group in the history of the human species has ever eaten a diet remotely resembling what that USDA food pyramid suggests as optimal. It is it's something that, in my mind, needs to be turned upside down, and our ancestors had it upside down, and actually, you know, as a result of having that upside down, you know, they didn't suffer the diseases and the chronic degenerative conditions and many of the challenges that we do today. Many of what people see as, you know, cancer, the big killers, cancer, heart disease, autoimmunity, and diabetes and obesity and all of these kinds of things, these are modern-day afflictions. And don't think that it's because all of a sudden, well, that's because everybody died when they were 40 back then. That's not true. Those statistics, when they talk about the average age of death, were taking into account infant mortality, which was considerable back when, you know, we were all occupying a much harsher environment. And mm-hmm. So when you take those averages, then it, you know, you might average things out to like 40 years of age. But in reality, the individuals within these primitive societies had the capacity to live every bit as long as we do today, only without the afflictions that we've brought upon ourselves. But you don't have to be over 30 nowadays in order to have arterial plaques, in order to have autoimmune diseases, in order to have cancer. These things are becoming increasingly common in younger and younger and younger people, including young children. So this is modern day stuff. And
when somebody
yeah.
says to you, Nora, for instance, let's just do a little back and forth here. So someone says to you, okay, I'm really not feeling like I want to be, you know, eating meat. There's different things that I'm feeling about it. There's things such as I know that there is so much going on in the meat industry with injecting animals with hormones and antibiotics and, you know,
I got
whatever
a problem
else.
With that kind of meat too, but yes.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I don't eat that stuff either, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So I'd like to just elaborate a little bit more on that, and I'm doing my best to stay very even keeled in this interview, because it sounds like we actually have a lot in common with,
right.
You know, the circle that we have gone and the presentations that I've given, talks, and et cetera, and what I personally have gone through, you know, in my life. And Weston Price actually has been in our aura here for many, many years. In fact, there are people around us still who got into his information years ago and are very committed to, you know, to what he was trying to communicate. So let's back up a moment. So listeners, as you're hearing this, and I brought up about the kinds of meat, and you heard Nora say, well, she, you know, she doesn't subscribe to all this meat that has the antibiotics and hormones and whatever else is in it. So let's touch on that a little bit. So a person is a little confused about that. What would you say?
Well, there are a lot of people who won't eat meat for a lot of different reasons. Now, if the reasons are health related, you know, we can take that on very soundly and put that to rest in a big hurry. And if the reasons are spiritual somehow, you know, that can be addressed also. I mean, consider, you know, the spiritual grounding of native populations all over the world who I think had a greater reverence for life than any of us today in this modern day world can even begin to appreciate, because they were in direct contact with it constantly. And yet, their way of addressing that spiritual connection wasn't by becoming a vegetarian. It was by honoring the lives of those animals and treating them with respect, and recognizing that there is a circle of life of which we are a part, and honoring our place and their place within that circle. But when it comes to sort of there are the political reasons, and some of those have very sound, there's some very sound things behind some of the politics behind not wanting to support, for instance, you know, feedlot meats and things of that nature. You know, I'm right with you there. However, the alternative to that isn't vegetarianism or veganism. The alternative to that is supporting the farmers and ranchers out there who are working very, very hard to do the right thing and are raising their animals out on fresh pasture in fresh air and sunshine, allowing them to eat what is natural for them to eat, allowing them to lead good lives that are not tortured lives, and they're not subjecting them to feedlots toward the end of their lives, and are doing everything in the most humane manner possible and the most natural manner possible. And to me, that is part of what is honors our cycle, our place within that whole cycle, and honors these animals as well. You know, we owe them something.
So these are considered grass. What we're talking
100% pasture,
right?
Or 100% pasture fed and finished meat. If you go to a website called eatwild.com, tremendous resource for finding locally produced grass fed meat sources. And there's also quite a bit of education there available on that site about what the benefits are of grass fed versus grain-fed and all that kind of a thing. I mean, the nutrient content is vastly superior in grass-fed. The fatty acid profile is vastly superior in grass-fed. You know, in a piece of grass-fed meat of an animal, from an animal that has just done nothing but eat, natural, its own, basically grass and shrubs its whole life, you may have more omega-3s in that meat than you'd get in a piece of wild-caught salmon. Without the radiation, well, with less anyway. But if that animal was grain-fed, you may have little or no omega-3 content in that meat at all, which means it would be grains are disproportionately high in omega-6s, it would be disproportionately imbalanced toward the omega-6 profile, which is pro-inflammatory. As a general rule. And it's not that omega-6s are evil in and of themselves, but fats need to be in our diets in a relative balance, particularly these essential fatty acids need to show up in a relative balance with one another. What shows up in nature is roughly a 1:1 to 1:4 ratio of omega, threes to omega sixes. And what we're getting in our modern day food supply is more like 1:20, 1:30. It hardly gives us a chance to combat potentially inflammatory compounds that we get exposed to or that we may consume. And it makes for it is one element that contributes toward chronic inflammatory conditions that virtually define modern day society.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
now,
it's a problematic thing.
What was the website again? There was a little breakup when you
I apologize. It was eatwild.com. And it's basically a source for nationwide source for sources of grass-fed meats in your area.
Mm-hmm.
And I really recommend, even though there are many mainstream markets now, natural food markets, and some of which will remain nameless, and I'm sure you all know who I'm talking about, that do make some of these things available. If you need to stop into a store and pick it up, then you can do it that way. I've even seen Trader Joe's carry 100% grass, pasture-fed beef, and that's
mm-hmm.
a great thing. I'm okay with supporting that. But what I think really is a wonderful thing to do is to make connections with farmers and ranchers in your immediate area, wherever you happen to be, and make a trip out there. And meet with them and take a look at their operation and see how the animals are being treated, see how they're being raised. Look in the eyes of the food that may end up on your plate someday. Understand in a very firsthand, very deep-seated way where your food is coming from. Because I think there's apart from supporting your own local businesses, which I think is important, I think that there's a spiritual element in that gets left out of the modern-day food equation that is also very worthwhile and maybe much more important than anybody realizes. I don't know of any double-blind studies or anything like that have been done in this regard, but it seems to me that, for instance, I've had the experience of eating an animal that I looked into the eyes of while it was alive. And sitting down and having that meal was a very deeply personal and very profound experience for me. It was very emotional. And I took that food into my body in a way, I believe, that was quite different than I might have taken something in that I just sort of bought shrink wrapped at the store or bought pre-cooked that I just sort of, decided to nosh on. When we have a firsthand knowing of where our food comes from, for starters, we know where it came from. We know what went in it. And we can safeguard that knowledge to some degree. But also, there's a personal connection to that food. Even if it's only in passing, that I think is important for us all to reconnect to. So, and that's just an opinion, but I think it's a consideration that doesn't get its due awareness.
Well, I know that what's been happening on the planet is that so many people are getting to a place of how would I say it? They're going within more instead of grasping so much of what's being quote fed to them from the outside.
Right.
And I think that when we do that, we begin to tap into a lot of our inner knowing. And for me, whether we're talking about the food that we're putting in our body or anything else about our life, it really is about going within for those answers and not grasping, you know, everything that someone is trying to put our way in many different forms, whether we're talking about religion or you name it. So,
right. I think we all need to be much more conscious of how we live our lives and what we contribute to this planet and what we're taking from it. And one of the things that I write about in my book and that I advocate as a way of eating, not strictly from this standpoint at all, but is one of, for instance, moderating one's protein intake. It turns out that there are tremendous benefits to doing that from the standpoint of human longevity, as well as improving your, you know, your energy supplies and quite a few other things. But it also, we live in humans still have the psychology of the, you know, of the wild beings we once were on some level. We still have that primal mind, so to speak. And mm-hmm. and in the wild, most every animal understands basically the sort of the law of feast or famine. That it's a lot of it boils down to that. You know, when food is made available, you eat what you can while you can, because you don't know if you're going to get to eat tomorrow. And mm-hmm. so the tendency is to overconsume to compensate for what might not be coming. Well, the problem with that is that we're now living in a time where we have this unnatural access to this unnatural abundance of food and food-like substances that are surrounding us 24/7 in a very convenient way, particularly in our society. And few people have to take more than about two steps in any direction to be able to get their hands on something they can put inside their mouths and chew up and swallow. And I know I drive by something like 15 or 20 fast food places on my way home from work every day. And so there's all kinds of food and food-like stuff around, and there are corporate interests that have tapped into that psychology and have also figured out how to tap into our biochemical makeup in a way to put substances in those foods and food-like substances that operate like drugs that make us want more of it, you know. In addition, you know, somebody has figured out that if they can get us to eat a carbohydrate-based diet, they can keep us hungry all the time, which is what a carbohydrate-based diet is going to do for you. Now, if you look at the animals that appear to be consuming, now, of course, when I'm talking carbs, I'm talking sugar and starch, really. The animals in the wild that are naturally designed to eat what appear to be a carbohydrate-based diet, like, you know, the grazing animals and things like that are eating plant foods, what are they doing all day? Their faces are on the ground, they're in the bushes, they're whatever, and they are eating constantly for as long as they are awake. They are never not eating in order to meet their nutritional requirements and their energy requirements. And mind you, they are designed physiologically to make use of these foods in a way that can supply them with what their bodies need. That's how they evolved. Now, the really interesting thing about that, though, is that even in animals that appear to be eating a carbohydrate-based diet, what's actually happening when they consume these foods is that they have a bacterial-based digestion. And it's the bacteria, it's not them, that they don't get their calories from the carbohydrates that they consume. What they're doing is they're eating these foods so that the bacteria in them actually get the calories from those foods and in turn convert these substances, convert these fibers to butyric acid, which, by the way, is a saturated fat. And that is where ungulates get roughly 70% of their caloric intake is from fat. Which, including, now we think of our relative, the gorilla, as being kind of a vegan animal. Well, I mean, they do eat some insects, but they actually have a more fermentative gut than we do, and much longer, you know, colon, much shorter small intestine, and very very big gut with a lot of bacteria to digest those fibers that they're eating all day long, by the way, into these butyrates that they absorb then for their caloric intake. That's what energizes them. So we're really kind of, as large mammals, we're all designed to be primarily, one could call, fat burners. We're designed to derive our primary energy from essential fatty from fatty acids and ketones. Ketones are the energy units of fat. Mm-hmm. And that's what's supposed to be powering our brains. It's what's supposed to be powering our organs. But we are taught that glucose is actually our primary fuel and that the brain can't run without it, that our organs can't run without it, that we have to be replenishing glucose all the time. And I'm here to tell you that is only true conditionally. It is only true if we have adapted ourselves to depending on carbohydrates as our primary source of fuel. And if you have, then you're basically enslaved to a constant preoccupation of having to try to maintain those blood sugar levels. And you can do it that way. You can manage your blood sugar all day long if you'd like. I personally feel that I have better things to do with my time and money. It's a lot more expensive to eat that way. A lot of people think that the way we're talking about eating is an expensive way to eat. And I'm here to say that it is actually the least expensive way to eat optimally that exists anywhere on the planet. I have a dear friend who I actually got on bended knee to write this book. She's she has this almost obsession with, in fact, for as long as I've known her, which has been many, many years now, her whole life has been really interested. She's always been really interested in how she can get by as cheaply as possible in life, you know, how she can spend the least amount of money and have the quality of life that she wants. So for her, it's kind of like a constant challenge, and she's researched this exhaustively, and, you know, she was an old subscriber to the Tightwad Gazette way back when and read every single one of those things and studied it to exhaustion. She was raised by a mom who just, you know, always was looking at the prices on everything and trying to figure out how to get the best deals.
Wow.
She's wired for getting, for living. This is somebody who can live well on something like $15,000 a year. It's like crazy how inexpensively she can live. And she's turned this into a, you know, into a real challenge. Well, it turns out she has adopted, you know, this dietary approach. And she comes from having in the past been a vegetarian. But, you know, she now, you know, recognizes the value of some of these animal source foods. And so she's incorporated them, and her health has improved tremendously in the time that I've known her. She was telling me, you know, one day just how cheaply it was that she said, wow, I can't believe how good I feel and how inexpensive this is. And I got down on one knee and I said, please write a book. Please. I said, you know this better than anybody on the planet, how to eat inexpensively and optimally well. I mean, she knows better than I do even how to do this. And so she did. She wrote an e-book called Primal Tightwad, appropriately. And it's available on the resources page of my primalbody-primalmind.com website. You can go there. If economics are a real strain for you, I'm here to tell you that you can go and read that book, and you will be able to live and eat more cheaply than anyone else you know, even probably a lot of the vegetarians you know. It's kind of a remarkable thing that she put together, and it's very well researched. One of the things that she did that I found fascinating and very telling was she created a week's worth of menus based on the kind of way of eating that we're talking about. And she then went and created and calculated down to the last penny what those meals cost.
Wow.
Right, you know, like 2 cents for this teaspoon of condiment, you know, whatever, right down to it. Then she went and made up a menu for a week of standard American diet, including, you know, the cheap boxed stuff and the, you know, the little, you know, your hamburger helpers and tuna helpers and your fast food stops and whatever else, and calculated all that down to the last penny. It was actually cheaper to eat the way I'm talking about. And not only was it cheaper, but she calculated it out and found it was cheaper to the tune of $1,500 per person per year.
Wow.
And that isn't even counting the medical costs that you are saving in the long run. The idea that it is too expensive to eat well is a myth that needs to die right here and now. It's not true. But it does require...
Go ahead.
Oh, it does require making some modifications to the way you look at food and to how you construct, you know, your basic dietary approach. And what the basic dietary approach is that I talk about is one in which you're basically eliminating sugar and starch to the extent that is possible from your daily menu. And then you moderate the amount of protein that you consume. And nobody actually needs more than about six or, well, I shouldn't say nobody, but most average adults do not need more than 6 or 7 ounces in a given day, not per meal, but per day, in order to meet their protein requirements. It turns out that when you meet your protein requirement, but you don't exceed them, it actually has an anti-aging effect. When you do exceed your protein intake, say, you know, you're just, a lot of people in the paleo genre are into eating slabs and slabs and slabs of meat. I mean, they're welcome to it, I suppose, if they want. But what really happens to that protein excess? Does it help us? Well, a lot of it turns to sugar and gets used the same way. And also adds a lot of burden to your, you know, body's eliminative system, because you have to process all the ammonia and other byproducts.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me?
Mm-hmm. I was going to say the kidneys, et cetera, yeah.
Well, protein, in a healthy person, high protein diet is never damaging to the kidneys. It's not harmful at all. But you are, it does take a tremendous amount of energy. Protein takes more energy to digest than anything else. It requires a lot of hydrochloric acid, because unlike herbivores, we have a hydrochloric acid-based digestion, not a microbial-based digestion. And so, it takes energy to create these things. It requires a plethora of nutrients, and it takes energy to produce all those digestive juices that break this stuff down. And it actually takes more energy to digest than it does to do just about anything else that we do, short of, you know, exerting ourselves in physical exercise. So when you're not overtaxing that, what that leaves you with is more energy for you to do
right.
with what you want. But it also helps to downregulate certain metabolic pathways that otherwise could leave you more susceptible, especially as you age. Not that protein is cancer-causing. I don't want to leave that impression, but that when we overconsume nutrients, when we overconsume either proteins or carbohydrates, we're upregulating pathways that stimulate cellular proliferation. When you're stimulating cellular proliferation, now when you're growing, if you're a child or a teen or, you know, somebody that, you know, that needs to regenerate somehow after, well, you can regenerate without cellular proliferation, but if you have a need for growth, for instance, well, then that makes sense to stimulate those pathways. But if you're an adult and you've done all the growing you're going to do, and now you're getting older and you're starting to get exposed to certain environmental compounds that may be causing your genetic material to mutate slightly, causing a little mutation to your DNA, we get it all the time. we're all exposed to hundreds of chemicals, and nowadays we're getting exposed to a lot of radiation, too, in our environment.
Right.
That's only going to get worse, whole other subject. But and what that means then is, if you, I mean, do you really want a mutated cell to start proliferating? What's that called? It's called cancer.
Right.
So, but what happens when you're not upregulating these metabolic pathways? And I go into this tremendous depth in the book so that you understand exactly what I'm talking about. It's kind of like these are mechanisms that are in place that are extremely ancient, and they're designed to kind of help us outlive what could be an apparent famine. So if we have what we need nutrient-wise to get by, but we don't have extra, then it's sort of like, to put it in modern economic terms, gee, it's too expensive to build a new house right now. Maybe we'll just fix up the one we've got. So your body goes into repair and regeneration mode instead of out with the old and in with the new.
Uh-huh.
And what that is literally anti-aging. It's a way of helping to regenerate you. And it's extremely powerful. And this research has gone on now for, you know, gosh, it's got to be close to 100 years of longevity research. And there's something called modified caloric restriction that has been understood to be universally beneficial across all species, and nobody ever really understood why. Now we know it has to do with insulin and insulin-related pathways that actually have that aging effect, and if it, and or anti-aging effect if we suppress them. And as it turns out, that the less insulin that you end up requiring over the course of your life, the longer you will live and the healthier you will be by far. But it sounds like you'd be hungry all the time. And here's the really cool thing. Fat doesn't factor into this equation. And again, I talk about why in the book. But dietary fat is very neutral in its effect on those pathways. So you can moderate your protein intake. You can eat as many fibrous vegetables and greens as you want to add the bulk, and also to add the extra antioxidants that I think are probably more important now than they ever used to be. And then you add as much dietary fat as you need to in order to simply satisfy your appetite. And the cool thing is it doesn't take a lot of fat to satisfy your appetite. So you're never hungry. You're meeting your nutritional requirements. You're not burdening your body with excessive need for digestion. You're
right.
Not over-consuming resources on the planet. You're making maybe more room for everybody else to be able to get enough.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
And I mean, what I'm amazed, Nora, about is, I mean, I am realizing that this topic is so... It can be so, how would I want to say it? It's very simple, yet, I mean, I'm looking at what we've been covering today and what you've been sharing, and I looked at my monitor here, and I'm going, this cannot be that it's the end of the show, because it was just like, whoa, what happened here? So what I'm feeling is that this is definitely what I'll do is I'll get back in touch with you, and I have a feeling what we should do is like do a part two or even, you know, a part three, because there is so much, even though it's simple. And I know that people are very hungry for this information. You know, we've been in the middle of all this for 25 years, and I know what many people are going through. So right now, what I would love is where can a person go? Where would you send them to, you know, get your book or to make contact with you or whatever type of contact information you want to give them?
Right. Well, the best place for me to get my book, I mean, is my website or through my website, which is primalbody-primalmind.com.
One more time, please, a little slower.
Yes, www.primalbody-primalmind.com. www.thebusinessparentsinc.com. And that said, and you can sign up for my newsletter there. There is a tremendous amount of free information available on my website. There are there's a plethora of podcasts available on my website on a number of topics that you might find extremely helpful. I also have a Facebook fan page under my name, and also another one under the book's name. And I actually do manage to get there occasionally.
is it best for them to go to that website then? Is there
yes.
a phone number?
Go to that website.
Okay.
However,
okay.
you know, my book is available in all the web, in all the bookstores. It's also available in all of the ebook formats that you might be interested in, and it's of course available through Amazon as well.
Right. Okay. Well, I know we're going to get cut off here if I don't move it. So
okay.
what I would like to do, Nora, if it's okay, I will get back in touch with you and we'll set something else up. And I think we need to put this into maybe a series of two or three shows, if that's okay.
Of course.
You know, with you. And this is a pleasure. And at some point, I'd love to just talk with you, you know, person to person as well, because, again,
sure.
you're doing a lot of the things that or at least for me, very close to my heart in regards to foods and eating. I mean, the conversations every week, every day that, you know, are around this are just amazing. So I want to thank you for taking the time today. You're welcome. If you give your website one more time, and we'll go ahead and let the listeners go onto the site.
Yes, so primalbody-primalmind.com.
Wonderful. Okay, Nora, thank you again, and I'll be in touch with you very soon.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. I'm so grateful to you for the time today, and you've been great.
No, thank you. No, you've been great.
No, you've been great. All right, we've both been great.
Okay, dear, thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, listeners, get in touch with Nora, and thank you. We'll be here same time, same day next week, Friday. Thank you for listening to Mind, Your Body, and Spirit Radio Show. Be well, and lots of blessings.